This is Justin K. Comer reporting for Rock Hard Caucus. This is a special report I'm putting together late on March 14th of 2024. It has been a hell of a week, and I just this is some audio that needs to be released as quickly as possible onto the Rock Hard Caucus podcast feed. The headline here is that a friend of the show, Tara McGovern, has been acquitted of both charges that the University of Iowa Police Department charged them with. That is disorderly conduct and interference with official acts. Charges brought to trial by the Johnson County attorney, Rachel Zimmerman Smith. Let me repeat that. Acquitted. Found not guilty. Unanimous verdict by a jury of their peers. Tara McGovern, not guilty of these crimes. And now I wanted to release this audio to the world. This is things that happened today. I've got audio from a Johnson County Board of Supervisors meeting. You'll be hearing audio of statements by friends of the show, Emma and Tara. I'm pulling this directly from the county website, and the audio does get a little bit fucked up. So just know that is not my fault. And then you are going to hear audio that I recorded myself at a press conference. You will hear statements from Clara, Tara, Nix, Emma, Izzy, Elizabeth, and Vincent. Some of those voices should be familiar to you, as they are very good friends of Rock Hard Caucus and I Hear I See Radio, and have appeared on those programs. And following that, there was a Q&A, which I did not personally record, so I'll be pulling the audio from a Corridor Community Action Network live stream video on Facebook. I cannot personally vouch for the audio on that one either, but it's fine. And in order for you to be a little bit more informed on the case, I will be, of course, linking to two Daily Iowan articles by Jack Moore about both the trial verdict, which came through yesterday, March 13th, and the press conference, which happened tonight, the evening of March 14th. I, of course, have audio that I recorded at the trial itself, both days, Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. I'm not going to include any of that right now. I'm hoping that I will have some time to go through that audio between now and Sunday, when Evan and I plan to record a regular episode of Rock Hard Caucus. But again, I felt that the material that you were about to hear was a little more urgent than that, so I'm sending it out now to spread the word far and wide. Thank you all for listening. See you in a few days.
Good evening. My name is Emma Denny. I'm sure some of you know me. I'm a resident of Johnson County. I am an artist and a TA at the University of Iowa, and I'm a volunteer at the LGBTQ Archive, where I co-facilitate a support group for trans people. I'm here today to speak to the fear, anger, and desperation that my community is feeling, on top of the hostility trans people already face in Iowa and the hostility we are already treated with. We've had to deal with seemingly unending legislation from the state and threats of prosecution here in Johnson County should we speak up and take action to defend and support our community and our loved ones. I myself have personally faced arrest and legal consequences for these actions. I'm here today because my community needs more than simple words of support from this body. We constantly hear messages from this and other authorities that we are being heard and seen and supported, but we demand material action, especially in this climate of hostility and violence. To this end, we demand that Johnson County adopt sanctuary city laws and policies, especially the following. One, a declaration of non-enforcement of current and future anti-trans laws. This includes bathroom bills and existing bills targeting trans children in Iowa. We also demand housing funding for non-market housing for those fleeing elsewhere in Iowa to come here. Johnson County has a reputation in the community as a safe haven, a refuge for trans people from all over Iowa. It's a place where people can come to feel safe and be part of the diverse and strong community here. And we need this body to take action now to protect that community before it's too late. I know of many people who are already planning to leave. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Sarah McGovern, they, them. I live in Coralville. I've been a resident of Johnson County since 1995. I am trans, and so are many other residents of Johnson County. Something we all have in common with everyone else in Johnson County is that we all have equal rights under the law. It has been an interesting year. In October of 2023, I attended a peaceful protest on the University of Iowa campus in objection to the repeated platforming of anti-trans speakers in our community. There was nothing remarkable about the protest. Nobody was arrested that night. 1 month later, I was one of six trans people arrested for the unremarkable October protest. And 1 month after that, a seventh trans person was arrested. We faced two charges: disorderly conduct, a serious misdemeanor, and interference with official acts, a simple misdemeanor. In the discovery process for my case, it was revealed that I was arrested because I opposed police militarization in 2021, and that is when the University of Iowa Police Department began surveilling me. This is on the record. My charges and the charges of my siblings stemmed from Governor Reynolds' fascist Back the Blue bill, also from 2020. But the responsibility for choosing to target me and the rest of us, and for refusing to stop targeting me, lies with the county attorney's office under the leadership of Democratic County Attorney Rachel Zimmerman, who you recently gave a raise to. I wrote to each Johnson County supervisor and asked for help. And I would like to thank V. Fixmarais and John Green for their steadfast compassion and action. Rod Sullivan chose not to help me in any way. Lisa Green Douglas chose not to help me in any way. Roysanne Porter chose not to help me in any way. Yesterday, justice prevailed when 12 Johnson County residents unanimously found me not guilty on both charges. And I learned with my family that I was not at risk of spending 13 months in jail. I am an independent, registered as a Democrat, in order to vote Mandy Remington into office so that this board can properly represent their constituents with both compassion and action, values that are shared by V. Fitzmaurice, John Green, and Mandy Remington. I'm not done. The community and any and all press is invited to join me and other trans protesters targeted by the University of Iowa Police Department for a press conference tonight at 7 p.m. at Wright House of Fashion, where we will discuss what comes next for my case. For my friend, Kate,
wind it up, please. We're over.
For the University of Iowa Police Department and for the Johnson County Attorney's Office. Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Clara Reinen, and I wanted to thank Tara and the others who were arrested after the Chloe Cole event for giving those of us who were arrested at Kinnick Stadium an opportunity to speak as well. So I have a short statement on what happened on December 9th. On December 9th, 2023, a protest occurred at Kinnick Stadium during University President Barbara Wilson's holiday party. This protest was an inevitable escalation after multiple protests and letters of demand failed to garner a response from the president regarding the University of Iowa's ongoing complicity in the genocide of Palestinians. During this protest, a group of seven individuals, including myself, partook in an act of civil disobedience and chained ourselves to the doors of Kinnick Stadium's press box to ensure our demands could no longer be ignored. This protest and act of civil disobedience was peaceful. However, upon arriving at Kinnick Stadium, the University of Iowa police responded to our nonviolent protest entirely inappropriately, with brutality and rage. The four protesters locked to Gate D received the worst treatment, including one protester having their nose shoved upward by the palm of an officer's hand, another having their wrist twisted so far behind their back they needed to wear a brace for nearly a month afterwards, and still another officer had kneeled on someone's back despite no active attempts to resist. I personally will never forget standing at the other doors and not being able to see the violence occurring, but instead hearing my friends' screams of pain. I knew the police had finished arresting the four at the first door when I saw two officers dragging one protester away on the ground, their hands gripping each of her arms as her feet trailed behind her, limp. My mind raced with possibilities. Was she unconscious? Injured? Worse? My heart pounded as I could only imagine what would happen when the police came to the three of us at the next set of doors. However, the police attempted to treat me far better than the previous four protesters, and it is incredibly clear why. There is one difference between myself and the four protesters that had already been beaten. They are visibly transgender, and I am not. The University of Iowa Police Department has shown us time and time again that they are not capable of accomplishing their mission, which they claim is to, quote, foster a safe, supportive, and inclusive campus environment, end quote. They claim to, quote, provide safety services equally to all members of the community, end quote, but we know they have no interest or intent to do so. In reality, the University of Iowa Police Department was formed in the midst of anti-war protests in the 70s with a clear purpose, to silence and intimidate dissenters that threatened the status quo. They are attempting to silence us once again by claiming they must replace all doors we were chained to, despite minimal damage. This amount comes to nearly $23,000. The status quo at the University of Iowa has long been one that supports a culture of violence, destruction, and settler colonialism through their partnerships with Collins Aerospace and the Operator Performance Lab, which has a particular interest in AI-powered fighter jets. Violence by those in positions of power is the status quo not only for the university, but for the whole state. If police violence is a reminder of one thing, it is this: that no matter how many times queer and LGBTQ plus folks are told that Palestinian liberation is not a battle for us to fight, they are wrong. Our liberation is deeply intertwined, and this becomes even more clear when we see police forces in the United States being trained by the Israeli military forces. Queer and trans people will never stop fighting to exist, just as Palestinian people will never stop fighting for their right to exist and occupy their own ancestral homelands. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Thank you.
Big thanks to Clara Reinen. And that puts me in mind of an event that is coming up in April. At the end of April, you have the opportunity to see Clara Reinen in the one person act, one act show. My name is Rachel Corey at Willow Creek Theater, which is right here somewhere on Gilbert Street. So keep your eyes open for that. And that's going to be presented in collaboration with Iowa City Action for Palestine, Iowans for Peace, Jewish Voices for Peace, and also Rachel's aunt Colette is collaborating with us. Colette lives in Coralville, where I live. So I'm going to keep my comments on the briefer side. You've all heard a lot from me over the last few days, over the last few months possibly. I just yelled at the supervisors, and so you can go look for that video too. Not at John and V though, because they have actually been helping me quite a lot. And speaking of the supervisors, I want to once again mention that we are very excited to vote Mandy Remington in for supervisor this year. Mainly what I wanted to cover was the aspects of the arrest, the trial, the jail time, parts of that maybe that didn't come up in the courtroom. And then, of course, we will have the Q&A session, and you can ask all of us questions, and we can answer to the best of our ability. So as you may or may not know, I went to the Chloe Cole anti-trans lecture as a way of showing up with my community on October 16th, 2023, to show the University of Iowa and Iowa City and to show my family and my friends that trans people deserve to love and exist and be celebrated and be visible in Iowa. So before I get... Thank you. I want to put some thanks at the very front of what I have to say, so that I don't forget any of them. So first and most importantly, I wanted to thank my trans community and our larger community of allies for the ways that they've showed up both in person and also spiritually and emotionally for all of us during this time. So that is my first thanks is to the community, which is all of you. And that also the community also includes the responsible reporting that we're seeing from quite a few of our friends here today, especially Justin Comer from Rock Hard Media. And thank you all so much for being here with us today. We appreciate it so much. Next, I would like to thank the 12 members of our community who did their civil duty and listened to arguments and made and unanimously decided to say that the two counts against me were bullshit. That way, so I was found not guilty yesterday.
Yeah.
And that is because none of us did anything wrong. So thank you to the 12 members of our community who showed up and listened and made actions towards justice. I would also like to thank Judge Jason Burns. I haven't been in a courtroom extensively like I was the last 2 days, and so I don't have a lot to compare in terms of one judge to another. But I did notice, and I'm sure that many of you that were there, noticed that Judge Burns made a real effort to educate and include people in his courtroom. He saw that there was a lot of the public there, and he made efforts to break down the parts that might not be obvious or known to us about a trial situation. And so I want to thank Judge Burns for doing an impeccable job serving. I would also like to thank our attorney, Gina Messimer. Parish Law Firm in Des Moines. Gina, we're going to all be seeing a lot more of Gina because she is a queen of us all. And then also, most of all, I need to thank my family, especially my spouse, Joe, our children, Lily and Atticus, and everyone who has helped us as we have gone through these last 6 months that none of us needed or deserved. So as I said, the protest happened. Nobody was arrested. It was a peaceful protest. Nobody did anything wrong. But the University of Iowa Police Department surveils both the university students as well as the community at large. And so they used their surveillance techniques to track down six trans people initially and then a seventh 1 month later. And so ultimately at our protest, there was seven trans people facing charges. I'm only going to speak to my own. That was my own experience, and other people can jump in with their experiences, which I hope and appreciate. I received a call from Detective Ian Mallory stating that there was a warrant out for my arrest. That's never happened to me before, so I didn't know what to do. And Detective Ian Mallory said I could either go to the University of Iowa Police Department to turn myself in, or I could go to the Johnson County Jail. And I think because it was easier to park at the mall, I went to the University of Iowa Police Department, which is in the mall. We all know this, right? That's where the jail is. Okay. And when I arrived at the University of Iowa Police Department on November 14th, I was actually, my hands were put into handcuffs. I was searched after my hands were in handcuffs, then placed into the police car where I was brought to the Johnson County Jail, where I was searched again with my hands still in handcuffs. I feel like these are important details because I don't know what could have happened in the car with my hands still in handcuffs between search one and search two. I arrived at the jail around 3:30 in the morning, and I was issued orange clothing that they give you at the jail, and I was in a cell from 3:30 in the morning until I saw the judge around 8:30 later that day. Coincidentally, it was Judge Burns, who I also saw yesterday and the day before in the courtroom. I'm mentioning the jail aspect of it because when it became clear that a serious misdemeanor plus a simple misdemeanor meant that there were charges that could result in up to 13 months in jail, the 6 hours that I spent in jail felt sufficient to my needs of that experience, and I didn't wish to continue with that experience. And all that to say, as Clara mentioned, as a visibly more visibly trans person may have a different experience in the Johnson County Jail than a person like such as myself. I am a non-binary trans person. I will never pass in any sort of way other than to be perceived as a woman. That is, has to do with what we understand about gender. And so that does carry with it a set of privileges that I never asked for, but still have. And so my treatment in the jail was different than the treatment of some of my trans siblings. And I think we're going to hear from some of those folks today as well. And then finally, I just want to come up to the aspects of the things that we didn't hear about in the court and why we didn't. You didn't see the video that I provided, and that was a choice that was made. Late in the trial, you might remember that I think it might have been the closing statements, the prosecutor mentioned that we hadn't seen that video, and that could have been provided at any time. It is available. It would only have showed you the other side of the videos that we all did see, where Lieutenant Trell grabbed my wrist and I told him to take his hands off of me and he said, I will not. I mean, I think we all experienced that video. So that was one thing we did not see in the courtroom. We also did not see extensive conversation about constitutionality, and that's because the prosecutor in the motion in limine requested that there were certain things that could not be discussed. And I don't know enough about how legal proceedings go, but I do know that we all deserved to understand a lot more about constitutionality than what we were able to understand in the courtroom. And so we're just going to have extensive conversations about that ongoing and how that relates to what do our peaceful protesting rights look like under the 2021 Back the Blue law. And then finally, the other thing that we were not allowed to make very clear in the courtroom is just continuing to mention that there were 7 trans people arrested for this protest, and they were the only people arrested for this protest. And this is a unmistakable targeting of the trans community done by the University of Iowa Police Department. We're not going to stop talking about it. It's not going to get less true if we stop talking about it. So, thank you. And finally, before I pass this along to hear from other people's experiences, I want us to remember that the person who made the decision to press charges against all of us and to refuse to drop those charges was Democratic County Attorney Rachel Zimmerman Smith. And we have still never heard a response from Rachel Zimmerman Smith. I know hundreds of people who have communicated with her. And so here we are in an election year in a blue dot state. We all have a lot of talking to do about what that means and where do we go from here. Finally, I think I said finally like 3 other times, but this is the last actual finally. The question does remain of whether or not there will be a choice at any point to pursue due restitution for the charges that were filed against all of us, for the time that I spent in jail, for the time that other people have spent dealing with these arrests. And I say that question remains open because it's really going to matter how our demands are received, whether or not we choose to utilize the leverage that we have available to us. So with that, I thank you for being here. I look forward to answering questions later, and I'm going to
on Nick. Okay, yeah, I'm Nix. Tara mentioned that. I was arrested on December 9th at Kinnick. I'm just going to speak briefly about my experience in the jail, and then I'm also going to mention briefly something about the University of Iowa Police. But yeah, I was injured. Claire mentioned me. I had my wrist injured pretty badly. I had to do physical therapy. The officer that injured me has broken someone's face also as well in the University of Iowa. This is public record knowledge, and they still hired him. So that sucks, and we should all care about that. I don't know if I can say his name. I'm still have a pending case, so I'm just going to keep that.
We know.
Yeah. yeah. yeah, I'm not going to go into, like, detailed about my experience in jail because it was pretty traumatizing, but I was put into solitary confinement there, which was pretty wild. I was originally put with some of my comrades in the women's section. I am trans. I was in there with them, and I was asked to leave, and I was escorted to solitary confinement, where I asked the sheriff's deputy, I said, why am I in here? And she asked me, you mean, why are you in jail? And I said, no, I know why I'm in jail. Why am I in solitary confinement? and she told me it was because I didn't identify as a woman. So to be clear, I was put in solitary confinement simply for being trans. This is in Johnson County. At one point she came back and I asked again, I was like, if I'm more comfortable in the women's cell, could I please be moved back there? I do not want to be in solitary confinement. It was absolutely awful. After I left, obviously, my partner was looking into this and the Prison Rape Elimination Act audit of the Johnson County Jail from 2021 explicitly states that this is not how housing should be determined and that a trans person's level of comfort should be considered in the Johnson County Jail. Unfortunately, when that audit took place, there were no trans people in the Johnson County Jail to speak on their experience. Wow, wild. Trans people in Johnson County continuously stand up for liberation, as we can see here. We consistently put our lives and bodies on the line to fight for people. Our county and city make empty proclamations and claim to want trans people to be visible, but when trans people are visible inside or outside of the system here, they're criminalized, isolated, and traumatized. That's all I got.
Hello, my name is Emma Denny. Some of you know me. I, along with half a dozen others, was charged in the same incident as Tara on October 16th. It has become clear, looking at the evidence from Tara's trial and from my own police reports, that the University of Iowa Police has engaged in a campaign of intimidation and unjust surveillance against trans people, local activists, and frankly, anyone else who speaks out and stands up for our community in Iowa City. UIPD, as state police, are acting to crush dissent in Iowa City and create a climate of fear in which protesters are intimidated out of using their First Amendment rights. They use the threat of almost unchecked arrest power and broad surveillance power, both physically and on social media, to impose a constant hazy fog of potential assault and criminalization. Many of us arrested were found not through being arrested that night, but through UIPD's month-long effort to scour our social media. The message here is clear. Protesters should be scared to openly live their lives, especially trans protesters. It is clear to me that we were targeted because being openly and loudly trans makes us more visible and vulnerable than our cis allies. Ian Mallory, in conversation with me on my arrest, said that he didn't want to interfere with my studies. I'm the only member of the Johnson County 7 who's currently enrolled at the University of Iowa. I defend my dissertation next month. Immediately upon my arrest, the university itself opened up an additional investigation against me, claiming that simply being accused of a crime violated the code of student conduct. I had to live in fear for months that, in addition to being charged for protesting, I would be thrown out of the university, have my 3.5 years of PhD research disappeared, and be fired from my job as a TA. While much discussion here tonight is about UIPD, and for good reason, I would like to say that the University of Iowa as a whole is complicit in these actions and this climate of fear. Much like Clara was saying, we cannot disentangle the violence that the University of Iowa does through its relationships with arms manufacturers and its continued relationship with state police from the violence that was done to us and other trans protesters. I would personally demand the dissolution of the University of Iowa Police Department. It is proven, frankly, to only be a threat to its students and its community. These last few months have been revealing. I've learned who I can trust in an institution that I once felt a part of, and I've learned that I can trust my community so much more than I ever thought possible. I've met so many wonderful and beautiful people, and I can't say anything better than that I love everyone I have met in the Iowa City trans community. And the University of Iowa Police Department simply makes us unsafe. Thank you.
Hi there. My name's Izzy. I'm a trans woman. I am 26. I've lived in Iowa City for maybe like 8 years now. I work as a research assistant at the cancer center at UIHC. I process blood samples for cancer research. I like that job. I have a good time with it. The state of Iowa has lurched rightward on trans issues, specifically banning kids from transitioning and banning kids from using like their name and pronouns at work or at their school. And the University of Iowa invited Matt Walsh, the current figurehead of the anti-trans movement, to the University of Iowa on April 17th, I think it was. Me and my girlfriend, we showed up to that. We committed some actions that the state considers disorderly. And yeah, sentencing's still pending, so I won't get into it, but you can read a cute op-ed article about it in the Gazette. But importantly, this action did not hurt anyone, and we were able to go home, like, unmolested. 2 weeks later, at my job at the cancer center, I was upstairs giving a patient an EKG. I was wearing scrubs. I came back downstairs from giving that patient EKG, and I walked into our office lab area to find three armed UIPD officers and one plainclothes detective. I was immediately handcuffed and told my rights and what was going on. I was being arrested for actions committed on the 17th. I was going to be taken to Johnson County Jail for booking. In this time, I was repeatedly misgendered by Officer Tugger. I think this might be the individual some are talking about. He is shown to be like very violent and very antagonistic towards protesters specifically. I was handcuffed, taken through exam rooms at the cancer center, escorted to a police car, put in that police car, and taken to the Johnson County Jail for booking for simple misdemeanors. I feel as though this was a violent overreaction to a nonviolent protest. I think it's indicative of a police department that truly has no oversight other than internally, and internally that's not sufficient. I agree with Emma, this police department should be abolished immediately or dissolved. They don't keep anyone safe. They only exist to go after protesters and surveil the university property to a great extent. They have 28 cameras all over campus that track license plates. It's called the FLOT camera system. They have extensive cameras all over any like pedestrian area on campus. And they only use this footage so far to go after protesters, to my knowledge. Yeah, it's all really got. I hope people can keep protesting. Trans kids, trans people are revolutionary, and we will not be quieted by this. Thank you.
Hey, what's up? My name is Elizabeth Jorgensen. I have just a couple of points that I think my friends haven't already gone over. Obviously, as it's been mentioned, none of us would be here without Rachel Zimmerman Smith, who has chosen to pursue this campaign against protesters who are transgender. I just wish she'd come out and say anything about it, because it's pretty clear that's what she's been doing. When I've talked to people who haven't been spending months talking about this problem, like I've had to, they don't seem to know this, but I feel like I have to emphasize that Rachel Zimmerman Smith is choosing to do this, right? That's why it's an elected position. That's why we get to vote for a county attorney, which we won't be able to do for another 3 years, unfortunately. But that's the problem, right, is that she's choosing to do this. She's actually picking and choosing who to prosecute weeks after the fact, and it just so happens that she's only choosing the transgender protesters. I wish she would choose none of them, but there were hundreds of non-transgender people there. So you already know that's what's happening. So it's no surprise, I think, then, that she's using our money, our county's money, our city's money, backing up what is otherwise a state police force, UIPD, right? We don't have a community police review board over UIPD. They ultimately report to Kim Reynolds because they report to the Board of Regents. And we don't get to pick those people, Kim Reynolds. I think one little tidbit about UIPD that surprises people is that they have these license plate cameras that automatically track everyone's car without a warrant, even though we voted them illegal in Iowa City in 2013. But this is a state police force. They do whatever they want. And Rachel Zimmerman Smith is happy to keep backing them up. You know, they're playing for the same team right now. But it's not just UIPD, and it's not just in Iowa City. Anyone paying attention sees this very one-sided, unfortunate fight between Iowa and queers. I mean, they want to ban the otherwise safe and cheap hormones that are keeping people alive right now. They are already banning books. You know that stuff already, but I I wish that non-transgender people would also see this as a fight between Iowa and our community here in Iowa City. They are trying to get a demographic victory out of this fight. They're trying to chase trans people out of Iowa, and that is going to hurt Iowa City too. So like, if you are in this fight, you should at least know that you're in a fight, you know? I think that would help. Thanks, guys.
I'm Vincent Chopa. I was one of the people that were also arrested for the Chloe Cole event. I got a phone call from Mr. Detective Ian Mallory one evening. Thank you. And he told me, hey, you know, I just need you to come down to the station, sign some paperwork. I was like, oh, could be about anything. Little to know, in about 12 hours, that paperwork means a warrant is out for my arrest. And if I don't come, actually, I will be detained. I don't have too much to say that my other beautiful people with me have not already said, but I guess I want to have like one statement be made clear. The university is obviously scared that the community is opposed to the university hosting these bigoted speakers that do nothing but just perpetuate hate in Iowa City. A beautiful bubble that does not need more of the conservative hate that is in so much of America be brought to it. They want to respond to this fear by trying to make us scared, trying to make us scared by arresting peaceful protesters, by using forceful compliance techniques that we previously touched on, harassing us, assaulting us, etc. I hope that other people who may not be present at this press conference can take away that everyone who was arrested did nothing different than the hundreds of other cis protesters that were also at Chloe Cole, Matt Walsh, all the other events that have happened this year. The university wants to play off these arrests to the grander public as upholding the law, because laws must be just, and we were just simply breaking them. So, of course, they have to, you know, do their proper duty. But as we can see from the bathroom bills that are trying to be passed, the various other anti-trans legislation that's going through the House right now, as well as the other like slew of discriminatory laws that has plagued America's past, the law oftentimes is not just in America. It's actually quite unjust.
Yeah.
And it's made to keep those who don't believe in the traditional American ideals silent. So I suppose if we're all going to walk away from this night with one something thing is don't be silent, be loud, and stand with us.
I've never been to a press conference or been in a press conference, and so we would like to take your questions and do our best to answer them. And I guess raise your hand if you have a second.
Hi, question for Tara and Emma. You mentioned that you had a series of demands. What are those demands?
Yeah.
First and foremost, the dissolution of the University of Iowa Police Department.
Yeah.
We would also like to see Johnson County and Iowa City Institute so-called sanctuary city laws and policies to protect our community from the kinds of violent legislation that the state is trying to impose on us.
Yeah. Yeah.
That includes demands that existing bills be orders of non-compliance with existing laws, and for future laws that are currently trying to be passed in our state. Secondly, to help cover cost of housing for people trying to move to Iowa City to avoid the kind of violence and persecution that these laws cause. We have, as I mentioned, an amazing and huge community here in Iowa City. It's genuinely remarkable as someone who's lived a lot of other places in this country. And we want to do everything we can to protect it, and we will do everything we can to protect it, and we would love the city to join us.
The only thing that I would add to that as a more of a short-term demand is that starting yesterday,
but definitely starting tomorrow. We would like law enforcement to get the fuck away from our protests.
Can you speak to the case law implications moving forward? What happened with Terry, your case specifically?
I would really like to. Is there any attorneys? So we won this case yesterday. It was the first time that the 2021 Back the Blue law was significantly challenged in the state of Iowa, to my understanding. I think that means something, legally. So we have the power, frankly, to pursue that in whatever direction and with whatever speed that we choose, working with our attorney, Gina
Munson. Hey, so I heard that as far as direct next steps for people hearing this is to, you know, continue showing up, continue protesting, continue being loud. Are there any other forms of action? Like, should we be donating anywhere? Should we be participating in any other way to help support all of you and the work that all of you?
I can start. You mentioned money first. I feel like it's probably the easiest thing to recommend people. The Prairie Lands Freedom Fund has like a JOCO 7 defense fund that I think has been used for legal fees and other criminal related fees. I think that'd be a great way to start. I would say in terms of like showing up and showing out, there is city council on Tuesday, and I think it'd be great to show up and like demand that A, the city does not comply with future anti-trans laws as well as current anti-trans laws, like demanding that like Iowa City Council takes a stand against the direction of the state.
I specifically would like to have a conversation about that at City Council the next two meetings, which I think are
19th is the next one.
Tuesday, the next one, and then the first Tuesday of April, which is the second.
Thank you.
Also, we've done email campaigns in the past, when they were thinking of censuring Rachel Zimmerman. I know that a lot of us wrote emails for that. So that's always a great option. Also, shameless plug, the Transgander is coming up. Friday, come support local artists. Funds will be going to local artists and what's the fund?
Iowa
Transmutual Aid. Yeah, so come to that.
Iowa Transmutual Aid, which does incredible work over the state.
Do they have a website by chance?
They do. Yes. I believe it's iowatransmutualaid.org.
I will tell people that don't know in the audience, so I'm on the board for the Iowa Transmutual Aid Fund. The Iowa Transmutual Aid Fund gives money to individuals who are trying to cover the cost of gender-affirming care. And so that could mean things like co-pays. It can also mean things like getting your kid over the border, because now care for minors is outlawed in the state of Iowa. And so all of our money is being distributed directly to the individuals. We operate on a mutual aid type of framework, not charity. We're not trying to decide anybody's worthiness versus not, as to whether or not they are able to get the funds. It's just, do we have it? Okay, we'd like to give it to people.
I might add as a final note, talk to your friends, talk to your coworkers about what's going on. I think a lot of people just aren't aware. It's crazy. I was arrested at my workplace, and some of my coworkers don't even know what is going on in terms of the state's anti-trans laws, anti-trans speakers, the anti-trans movement. I think just keep being loud about this, talk to people. I think normal people see this and they're like, oh, that's fucked up. And I think that we can capitalize on that and be like, okay, this is weird. If you're freaking out about the trans issue, you're weird. And can you educate people? Thank you.
I have a question for you, too. I was just wondering, is there informal or formal group that trans community folks can get together on a regular basis and just support each other, share news, share things that are coming up, just a regular place?
I can speak to some of that. I volunteer at the LGBTQ+ Iowa Archive and Library. Lots of incredible programs for the queer community and the trans community specifically, including a bunch of access resources, a bunch of social events, and support groups. And that would be a wonderful organization to reach out to.
And Lyle is housed in the closed house, which has also a lot of other organizations housed in there, and it, to me, feels like a very welcoming and affirming place for all of us. So I would add PS1 in general, as well as Lyle,
And we'll be at PS1 all day Saturday the 30th. We have events planned. There's a community meal and gamers board session with Diversions Cafe. And there is one more activity on Saturday there, and I'm forgetting what it is. No, that's Sunday. Well, Corridor Community Action Network, there's an event listed, and there's a whole weekend of stuff starting with Transgander on Friday and going through Sunday. And some of that's at Close House.
You mentioned in your trial that following your arrest, that you were no longer going to be participating in protests on University of Iowa property. Mm-hmm. All of the, I could be wrong, but I think all arrests that have been made have been in relation to some extent to University of Iowa property. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that still the case for you? Right? Will you still stay off not participating protests on University of Iowa property? And then I would love to know for the rest of the group kind of how you are feeling about that question.
Speaking
are you
only for
that?
Myself.
For sure. And I'm going to be moving the mic around just to try to make sure.
Thank you. Thanks. So yeah, speaking only for myself, my answer to that question is that I will not be participating in any protests on campus until we are certain that there will be no law enforcement interfering with any protests on campus. That is a personal choice that I'm making, and I think that everyone should have the opportunity to make their own personal choices about how they choose to participate in protests.
I would say that in all this, I'm also an organizer for COGS, the Graduate Student Union at the University of Iowa.
Ooh,
I'm going to have my employer prevent me from speaking up.
There you go. Yeah.
I feel very similarly in that regard as Emma. I'm also a graduate student at the University of Iowa. And even though I disagree with so many of the things that my university is doing and I don't approve of what people in positions of power are doing, this is one of two schools in the entire country where I can study the specific program that I'm in. And the other state is in the other school is the University of Alabama. So it's somebody in the queer community. It's like Iowa, Alabama. But, you know, I grew up in Iowa, and I think to protest somewhere you love and cherish is to take pride in the institution that you are a part of. And I feel that every day I'm on campus and exist exactly as who I am. And I let my students, although none of my actions reflect my employer or reflect things that I tell my students, I very much follow the university's employee policy on political opinions. But every day I show up on campus and love my students and help them learn while also existing as who I am is an act of resistance in and of itself. And I will be damned if I let the University of Iowa police scare me away from the place that I love.
I guess one thing I want to say about university property in connection to protest is if you've gone to a protest in Iowa City, it is probably met at the Pentagrass. Mm-hmm. So it's frustrating that UIPD has control over a meeting place that is used for a lot more than university business. I mean, yes, it belongs to the university, but that is just a centerpiece of our community, and we should be able to use it for whatever we want to. Up until very recently, until another good deed of Gina's, the university liked to just slap every protester with a ban from all university property. And if you've never tried to navigate Iowa City while being banned from university property, it's not great. No. So.
Yeah, just to add to that, like the university property extends far further than just like academic buildings on town. Mm-hmm. They own a lot of McBride. They own a lot of just like random buildings in the middle of Iowa City. The campuses obviously are an important infrastructure tool that they own, and so a campus ban extends far further than just the campus building that you might have committed a protest-related crime in. And I think with that, it's like their goal is to intimidate people from speaking their mind.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention, too, that especially with the license plate technology that the university utilizes, there were two occasions in the week following my own arrest where university police vehicles were parked outside of my academic building and followed me until I got to my car. And so I think even when we are not doing anything to make ourselves more of an inconvenience aside from just existing, they let us know that they are present and that they are watching us. And so, you know, like everyone else has said, we it's nearly impossible to live in Iowa City without interacting with the university in some way.
Not to mention they stalk our social media.
Right.
Yeah,
fan behavior.
And I think that my answer is reflective both of the fact that I don't live in Iowa City. I live in Coralville. And I'm not affiliated with the university anymore after having graduated in 2000, before many of you were born. And so to declare publicly that I'm not going to participate in protest on campus as a personal choice is reflective of privileges that I have that other people do not have if they live in Iowa City, if they work or are affiliated with the university in some way. I will say the rally that's coming up for Trans Day of Visibility is taking place at College Green Park, which I'm personally relieved about because of the large amount of youth involved, and I still am feeling very nervous about the University of Iowa Police Department, and will continue to until they're dissolved.
Yeah, I personally am not going to answer that question as to not further incriminate myself in any way in any action I might be a part of.
So. Just a quick comment on hearing your voices, raising your voices. Thank you, microphone guy. That really helped. Use the technology so it's harder to hear you. There's a number of people that look like you're with the press. I would congratulate you hearing about this, not only on Iowa Public Radio, but National Public Radio and in the Washington Post. So whoever's doing your press work,
all Tara.
We've just been raising our voices collectively and finally started to make some progress. And I would say that I started to see that shift when the first time that Iowa Public Radio covered what was going on. I definitely started to see that shift when the Iowa City Human Rights Commission issued the statement in support of us. I definitely saw more support when Laura Burgess and V. Fitzmaurice Rise started to have conversations about authoritarianism in Iowa. And so I think it's a collective action that is getting attention. And I think one organization I have not yet given thanks to is the Queer Equity Institute in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The QEI is not based in Iowa, but they care about Iowa, and reached out to us and have been helping us to navigate the world of media. So big thanks to QEI and especially Myrtle.
Also, if you're ever on a jury, remember what jury nullification is.
Woo! Woo!